This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Not too many years ago, a diagnosis of cancer meant one of two things. You died or you were cured. That wasn't always true then, and it's less and less true now. With advances in detection, treatment, and technology, 62% of adults diagnosed with cancer today can expect to be alive in 5 years. For most of those who can't be cured, cancer today is more like a chronic illness than a death sentence. According to the latest estimates, there are 10 million Americans alive today who've had cancer, which raises a host of issues about aftercare and screening and depression and health care and stigma, many of which are symbolized by the controversy over what we call people who live with this set of diseases. For many, cancer survivor implies that they've been cured or that they've won a heroic struggle, and neither may be accurate. Later in the program, we'll talk with the author of a new book about the remarkable history of the remote and dangerous passage generations of sailors took around the tip of South America. But first, the quality of life after a diagnosis of cancer. If you've been there, do you see yourself as a cancer survivor? What issues have you had to face, from psychological to physiological? What's changed in how you live your life? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Dr. Fitzhugh Mullen, professor of pediatrics and public health at George Washington University. He's a contributing editor of the journal Health Affairs. He joins us on the phone from his office in Bethesda, Maryland, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
You're credited with being the first person to use the term, the idea of the term cancer survivor some 20 years ago. That's after you were diagnosed with cancer yourself. Tell us about that.
Well, in 1975, I was 32 years old, and one day I took a chest film on myself because I hadn't been feeling so sharp and discovered a major cancer in my chest and went on to surgery that was quite complicated and difficult, radiation, chemotherapy. I spent 2 years really under the gun and came out happily, came out the other side alive and hoping to get back into life. And during that time and after, I was troubled a little bit by where I was. At first, I was very clear I was sick and fearful of dying, and mostly I wanted to know when I'd be cured.
Mm-hmm.
And what became increasingly apparent was that, as for most everybody with cancer, the binary notion of either death or cure, which we kind of start with, isn't the reality. The reality is kind of a DMZ, a kind of purgatory, in which for a long time it may not be clear exactly the outcome, with lots of complicating issues that nobody really focused on. And really that experience caused me to write about what I eventually called the seasons of survival in a piece in the New England Journal in 1985 that kind of laid out this uncharted territory of the cancer survivor.
Well, what are those seasons of survival?
Well, what appeared to me then, and I think remains so today, you've got an acute period when you're kind of under the medical and surgical gun being treated, and that's a well-established phase. But then you go into a long period, depending upon the kind of cancer, where it's uncertain what the outcome is going to be,
mm-hmm.
sometimes with medical complications. At that point, social, vocational, insurance complications arise. And if one does well and continues on into life without recurrence or with recurrences that are contained, you enter into what I call a period of permanent survival, because the lost breast or the missing lung or the problem with insurance, et cetera, remain with you for the rest of your life. Also, the positive side, the place you've been, the thing you've overcome, the toughness that you've gained in many cases, from the experience. I don't mean to be whining about it. I mean, it's a whole medley of experiences, many of which are negative, but some of which are positive. That's part of what I've called permanent survivorship.
There is controversy, though, over the use of that term. It means different things to different people.
The term is not a terrific one, and I used it only absent finding anything better. The term always was associated and is now with particularly with prison camps and the Holocaust, and that's something that stays with one. And I think in the same sense with cancer, the diagnosis or the experience stays with one. I don't mean that it's the same experience by any means for everyone. Some people have very benign experiences, a lumpectomy and nothing else, and you live happily ever afterward, as it were. And other people, of course, have horrendous experiences, and many do die as well as a result of it. So it's a variety of experiences, but the point is that while you are undergoing it, the outcome is very often not clear. You don't know whether you're going to be a five-year survivor or not. You don't know what the outcome is going to be. The reality is this set of experiences that you're struggling with, and what the therapies and what the support activities and what the vocational backup, et cetera, are, relate to those experiences which you're having as a survivor.
And really, you were trying to focus attention on a lot of those aftercare issues.
Indeed. And in that article, I said, we really ought to have an alumni association. We're a huge alumni group. And yet at that point, nobody had really thought to organize or even develop the identity. And from that, in 1987, we developed a group called the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship, which continues on today proudly as an organization that speaks for the interests of and the problems related to cancer survivors, which gets into the whole not only research and support for survivorship, but the whole question of are cancer survivors getting good health care, are they insured, what's happening with cancer therapies, et cetera. But that's the NCCS, which goes on yet today.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Dr. Fitzhugh Mullen, and let's take a call from Brenda, who's on the line with us from Shelby, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm a 40-year cancer survivor of Wilms tumor. I had it in 1956 at the age of 11 months.
Congratulations, Brenda.
Thank you. I'd like to say that being a cancer survivor, the day that you're considered cured past your 5 years of treatment, that's not the end of the story. There are many of us that meet online with the Association of Cancer Online Resources at acor.org, and we're on a mailing list for LT survivors. And we have a lot of late effects from radiation and chemotherapy. We're all very grateful that we've made it and lived as long as we have, but the medical community usually doesn't recognize late effects of chemo and radiation, and we're finding out that there are a lot of late effects, and there are oncologists working with us, helping us find out what our late effects are.
That's a terrific point, Brenda.
Yes.
The research community has done a terrific job looking for, and in many cases, finding treatments. Researchers are less inclined to deal with and look at long-term and after effects because some of the treatments are pretty punishing, and the punishment or the problems associated with them aren't always immediate. They are, as you observe, long-term.
Right. Prior to the probably late 1970s, the treatments were a lot harsher.
Yeah.
And I was 11 months when I had cobalt treatment in 1956, and I was told the machines leaked then, too, so it wasn't just hitting the kidney area.
Mm-hmm.
But
is part of it, Brenda, that maybe in 1956 nobody thought there would be 40-year survivors?
Oh, there were no survivors. I was told I was the only survivor at the hospital where I was treated. So, but right now, Wilms tumor has about a 95% survival rate. You know, when I had it, there wasn't any survival rate. But technology's come a long ways. Doctors have come a long ways. But a lot of physicians that aren't aware of late effects don't recognize people have late effects. They have problems with fatigue and pain issues, and they just can't really believe sometimes that it's 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, and it does happen. And we would like to, you know, tell physicians, yes, this does happen. We're not crazy. It's not in our heads. And like I said, there's 300 of us online that are meeting on this ACOR website, you know, with this discussion group.
Brenda, the best of continued good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 And Dr. Mullen, she apparently had no difficulties describing herself as a survivor. The treatment is another issue, I guess. But for a lot of people, it's a philosophical problem.
Well, the first time that I really wrestled with it was at a event back in the early 1980s when the issue was not well focused. And the American Cancer Society sponsored an event called the Cured Cancer Congress, which was a nice idea. The idea was to celebrate for those people who had some kind of long-term positive outcome. At the event, a woman came up to me looking terribly guilty, and she opened by saying, I know I'm not supposed to be here because I was only diagnosed 6 months ago, but I was so interested to come in here. please excuse me for being here. And I thought, lady, please don't apologize. We're all in this together. By the way, what is, you know, when do you declare yourself cured? And that's that's what really put the idea of finding some concept that could really state that we were all a part of a family of people who were struggling to overcome the disease in its various ways. People object, I think, to the term survivor because in some cases they like to feel they've put it behind them. And that's an understandable sentiment. I like to feel that most of the time myself. Others object to it because they feel that it relates to the Holocaust, perhaps, and then out of respect for people who were there, this isn't the same, and I can understand that. I would say, give me a better term, and I would happily use it. I think it works pretty well, and certainly the concept is a very powerful one, and I feel quite wed to that. If we have another label to put on it, I would happily do that, but I have not found one.
Dr. Mullen, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Neil.
Fitzhugh Mullen is a professor of pediatrics and public health at George Washington University, a contributing editor of the journal Health Affairs, and he was with us from his office in Bethesda, Maryland. Joining us now on the phone from her home in New York is Musa Mayer. She's written several books on breast cancer. The most recent is After Breast Cancer, Answers to the Questions You're Afraid to Ask. Ms. Mayer was diagnosed with breast cancer 15 years ago, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello, Neil. It's good to be with you.
You've been living with breast cancer a pretty long time now, but you say you're ambivalent about that word, survivor.
I am, and that has changed over the years. I was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in 1989, and after my chemo and mastectomy, I felt, as many women do, that I was entering that phase of limbo, living in fear of recurrence. And no one could really tell me if I was cured or if I was not. The new C word is really cured and not cancer anymore, since it's okay to talk about cancer. And in those early years, as some of the women in my support group had recurrences and started dealing with metastatic breast cancer and ultimately died, I really felt like using that word survivor was almost tempting fate. And it felt a little disloyal to them in some way.
Survivor guilt, perhaps.
In a sense, yes. First of all, proclaiming myself as a survivor was something I did not know. The reality was really the not knowing.
And also distancing yourself from those others.
Yes. In fact, I have a friend who puts it very eloquently. She sees the word survivor as a symbolic way of putting an end to cancer, doing just what you're saying, distancing oneself psychologically. But I see it as really more complicated than that, at least for breast cancer, because with breast cancer, only 50% of the recurrences will have happened after 5 years. And so we can live for many, many years. Now, statistically, our odds get better with each passing year that we will ultimately survive. And there are some very aggressive forms of breast cancer where if you don't recur in the first few years, the chances are extremely good. But it's really making a statement that we're not prepared to make. And since in my work as a breast cancer advocate, I primarily work with women who have metastatic breast cancer who almost all will face the death of that disease at some point, though many will live with it chronically for many years. For them, the term survivor is a very ironic one.
We'll continue speaking with Musa Mayer and continue taking your calls when we come back from a short break. 800-989-8255 or email us totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the modern realities of living with cancer. If you've been diagnosed with the disease, do you see yourself as a cancer survivor? What issues have you had to face after treatment? Give us a call. Share your experiences. Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address, totn@npr.org. And our guest is Musa Mayer, the author of several books, most recently After Breast Cancer, Answers to the Questions You're Afraid to Ask. Let's get another caller on the line. Carol's with us from Boston.
Hi. I wanted to comment on the notion of seasons of survival.
Mm-hmm.
3.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and the moment I stepped out of the hospital, my husband said, "Well, you survived." And my children said, "Well, you survived." And I thought, what are they talking about? I've just begun. And so I think it depends on who's looking at you. And that's one point I want to make. And the other is, for me, it's sort of like the elusive brass ring on a merry-go-round. You know, I'm hoping one day to be able to hold on to that, but 3.5 years later, I still am afraid to call myself a survivor. So
it's always there in the background somewhere, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's in the background and the foreground. It's there.
Definitely
it's there. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Musa Mayer, does that sound familiar?
Oh, yes. Carol just perfectly expressed how I felt at that point. That sense of isolation between the public knowledge and expectation of what, especially being a breast cancer survivor, this is such a pink disease. There is so much effort that goes into reassuring women that they'll be fine, that 97% of early breast cancer patients are alive at 5 years, and all these positive messages that we can feel, especially after we finish treatment, very alone with our fears and very isolated, even from people close to us.
I think my family's optimism was a great help to me because it didn't allow me to get mired in the fear and the worry. I thought, well, if they're so optimistic, maybe I ought to think about it in that way. So that, it actually was very helpful to me when I, you know, and certainly they were trying very hard, but it appeared to me, I mean, I appear to have a good prognosis, but it appeared to me that they really believed that, and I thought, well, maybe I should take a look at that as well. But it certainly exists very much, you know, certainly at 3.5 years later, there's no question but that at some point I'd like to say that I'm a survivor. But I don't. When do you say it? Do you say it after 5 years? Do you say it after 10 years? I don't know when you say it. But
and Musa Mayer, what did you mean when you called it a pink disease?
Well, I simply mean that this is the disease that American women, at least according to some studies, fear above all others, despite the fact that heart disease takes many more of our lives. And women characteristically overestimate by a factor of many times their risk of getting breast cancer. And so I think the need for the word survivor and the optimism that is constantly being projected by public health messages is in direct proportion to the amount of fear, much of it unwarranted, that you might say breast cancer awareness has brought about in the culture. But it's really also a lingering effect of how cancer itself has been perceived for many years.
Carol, thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
Now hang in.
Yeah.
Right. And I wanted to ask you, we've gotten an email from a woman who asked us not to use her name. I'm a 30-year survivor of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, originally given 3 months to live. Are there other people like me who wish they had not survived and feel guilty for not justifying their life?
Oh, that's a real tough one. Oh, my. I know that there are communities out there. One of your earlier callers talked about the many mailing lists online where people can reach out to one another who are living with some of the difficult burdens of the long-term legacy of cancer treatments and who can offer much support and reassurance. So I would encourage anybody who feels isolated with that, with survivorship issues, with continuing problems psychologically or physically, that they contact an organization or join one of the many online groups.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Musa Meyer is a writer and breast cancer advocate. Her latest book, After Breast Cancer, Answers to the Questions You're Afraid to Ask. She joined us on the phone from her home in New York. Now, to help us talk a little bit more about the psychological issues facing cancer survivors, we're joined by Julia Rowland, director of the Office of Cancer Survivorship at the National Cancer Institute. She's with us on the phone from her office in Rockville, Maryland, and very good of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon, Neil. It's really a pleasure to be able to join you for this conversation.
Your field, psycho-oncology, you've worked in it now for 25 years. What changes in people's needs are you seeing today as people live longer with cancer?
I think one of the most important changes that we've seen are people recognizing that there are needs that go well beyond the diagnosis and treatments that we're offering today, and that acknowledging these and addressing them across the continuum of care is critical to optimal outcomes for individuals who are diagnosed in the current context. And one of the things that we've heard so beautifully articulated today by all of the speakers thus far is the fact that being disease-free, in other words, being told you have no more evidence of your cancer, does not mean being free of the disease, that there are many problems that linger long after treatment may have ended. And that's the piece that's really changed now in the context within which care is being delivered. Physicians and care systems are beginning to recognize that.
And as you look at those, on the other hand, if you still have the disease, there's a reality that you may be living with it not merely for years, but decades.
Absolutely. I think that's probably one of the biggest changes. As you mentioned early in the program, we currently estimate just in this country alone that there are almost 10 million cancer survivors, and that is individuals who are living with a history of the disease. It doesn't mean that they're cured of the disease necessarily, but their prospect is that they're living long-term with the disease. About 14% of those individuals were diagnosed as long ago as 20 or more years, like our first caller, Brenda, who is a 40-year survivor, and that population is growing. And I think when Fitz was saying earlier, when that language came into our lexicon, survivor, survivorship, that notion, it's important to remember that when that term, and in his describing the seasons of survivorship, came in, the most common term for someone diagnosed with cancer was that that person was a victim. And what introducing the term survivor and survivorship has done for us is said that, no, you can live long-term with this disease. Yes, you may ultimately die of it, but many more people will die of something else.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Michelle, who's with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hello.
Hi.
My problem has always been, back in 1990, I was diagnosed with uterine cancer, and it ended up being completely contained, and surgery was able to remove all of the cancer. So I didn't have to go through chemo or radiation or any of the other things, any of the other treatments that are so really hard to go through that all of these people who are survivors go through. So I've never quite felt that the term survivor was one that I could use for myself. I never felt quite qualified.
Hi, Michelle, it's Julia, and I think that's, you know, something that many people struggle with, and as Fitz said earlier in the program, do you have to have gone through Armageddon to claim that title? And I think the general philosophy, again, certainly that we embrace here at the National Cancer Institute, but also that the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship sort of put out for people to recognize, is that it doesn't matter what your experience has been, that you're entitled to that title if you choose to embrace it. And I think that's a very personal decision, as, again, you've heard in the conversation this afternoon. Some people think that's a wonderful term. Other people don't think of themselves that way, and there's nothing, you know, wrong about how you see yourself in that context.
Yet Michelle's not the only person who sees it as perhaps, in their cases, a little overly heroic. Are there appendicitis survivors?
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Michelle. Let me read this email that we got from Dan. I have multiple myeloma, a cancer of the bone marrow, which is generally considered incurable. Still, I'm in pretty good shape after drug therapy, radiation, and a bone marrow transplant last year. My cancer is in remission, but I don't think I can really call myself a survivor. The doctors tell me the cancer will almost certainly come back, and I will most likely die from it eventually. So what am I? Is there a different word to describe my status? The phrase that comes to my mind is living with cancer.
Well, congratulations to you for living and living well with your cancer. I think that, again, going back to the definition that the NCCS put forward is that you're entitled to call yourself, if you choose to, a survivor from day of diagnosis for the rest of your life, whether you die of something totally unrelated or you die of your actual cancer diagnosis or its treatment. So it's really, again, a very personal decision in here, what you want to call yourself. And lots of people are out there living with active disease, which is being now maintained, if you like. And there's some movement abroad to think more generally of cancer as a chronic illness, although I'd have to say there are plenty of people across the country who don't particularly like that language either. We are definitely struggling for how do you describe a personal experience, what is most comfortable for people, and we may have lots of different terms that we use for the different stages or experiences of people who have these many diseases that we call cancer.
All right, let's hear now from Rebecca, who joins us from Center Ridge, Arkansas.
Hello. By no means do I want to take away any of the sympathy that people have for people that have had cancer, but I have a box at home filled with effects of my late husband, and one of these effects is a cancer survivor medal. Personally, I think I'm the only one that is a cancer survivor of his cancer.
Rebecca, thanks for calling in. And, you know, you're absolutely right. One of the things that we're realizing increasingly is that survivorship is not just the individual with a history, but it's the family members whom we often think about as secondary survivors, if you like, all of us touched by the experience of somebody who's been living with this. So you're right. You're entitled to call yourself a survivor, too.
Does that medal sometimes make you, I don't know, how does it make you feel, Rebecca?
It makes me cry. It was a very hard illness, and it was colon cancer, and it was long-term, and the treatments were sometimes even worse than what he had to suffer with the disease. And so I probably couldn't look at it today without deep sadness.
Our sorrow for your loss, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
Bye.
Let's go now to Amy, and Amy is on the line from Kansas City.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I was just so moved today. I'm 3.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with melanoma stage 3, meaning it had gone into my lymph nodes at age 27. And I am, and I appreciate your guest saying that disease-free, that seems to be a pretty good phrase for how I feel. And I guess I'm glad to hear that there really are millions of people who are disease-free and are still dealing with the lingering effects, because I feel sometimes that while my family is very supportive and my friends, I feel like sometimes, should I be over this by now? You know, it's been 3.5 years. My health is good. I've gone through treatment. I'm not over it. You know, I do have the insurance issues. I had all my lymph nodes taken out of my groin area. I wear a compression garment every day. In the summer, that means I don't wear shorts. Just all of these issues that when you look at me walking down the street, you would never guess I'm carrying around. So I just want to thank you for dealing with this issue today.
I wonder, Amy, when you're the people who do know what you've been through look at you, do they look at you differently?
I don't think differently, because especially my close family and friends who were with me through the whole thing, I just don't think that they think that I think about it every day. And I do. And I do.
I think, Amy, it's true that many survivors sort of carry that thought that their family and friends move on, and it's something that's life-altering for you.
Most definitely. I mean, everything changed in my life because of it.
Right. One of the things that I can say is that because of the growing population of individuals who are living, you know, lifetimes in some cases or minimum months and years after their diagnosis, that the Cancer Institute has come to recognize that this is an important area to address and understand. And in fact, it was really in direct response to consumer advocacy that the Office of Cancer Survivorship that I direct was established here at the NCI. And there is a major commitment here to recognize both a testimony of the many successes that have been achieved in, you know, diagnosing and treating and controlling cancer, but also the challenge posed by the treatments that we deliver and the long-term effects that we create for those many people now who are living long-term with a history of the illness.
Amy, thanks very much for the call and continued good luck. Hang in.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And there's an email we got from Jane in Baltimore. I agree with your guess the word survivor is not a good one. I've tried to put the whole incident behind me. I've been cancer-free for 12 years. I worry when I go to the doctor what my test might show, but I'm now in the same general population for risk of recurrence. I found that the wellness groups don't allow people to get on with their lives, and I found it to be a very negative experience. Everyone's cancer is different, and just because one has a recurrence doesn't mean that I will.
Jane, those are wise words, and congratulations on being 12 years out from your diagnosis and treatment. And it's great to hear that you're doing well. And I, you know, think that's terrific. And you're right; the language, we're struggling with the language. And if you come up with a brilliant idea about what we should, how should we refer to this, do let us know.
And let's see if we get one more call in. Dawn is with us from Los Altos, California.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer as my initial diagnosis in October of 2001, and I was given 6 months to live, and I'm still here.
Congratulations.
I have a few things I want to mention. Musa mentioned the 5-year survivorship, which is a bellwether term for a lot of cancer folk, but of course in many cancers that's not true. So we can't at 5 years take a deep breath and consider ourselves survivors. We still have to keep walking with the sword of Damocles over our heads. I have a question. The doctor was saying he was searching for a new term, or that a new term could be looked at for survivor, and I'm wondering why we need a term, why we can't just say we're people who are diagnosed and are living with cancer. I'm in remission now, obviously, and I'm considered no evidence of disease, which means that the tests that we have now can't find any evidence of my breast cancer, but it's there. It's hiding someplace, and I dare say in some time it'll come and raise its head again, and I'll have to undergo therapy. But I'm happy saying that I'm living with cancer, because I am. After that first shock and after the treatment and after doing a lot of emotional work, I realize I do have it. And unless something else kills me, I will not be a survivor of breast cancer. So I would say that we will consider ourselves survivors of breast cancer, perhaps when we are dying of something else.
Dawn, I'm going to have to say that's the last word, and it's as good as any we've heard.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, and continued good luck.
Thanks.
Julia Rowland, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me, asking me to join you.
Julia Rowland is director of the Office of Cancer Survivorship at the National Cancer Institute. She joined us on the phone from her office in Rockville, Maryland. When we come back from a short break, Survival at Sea. We'll hear from the author of a new book about the stormiest and most tortured waters on the globe, the Drake Passage, south of Cape Horn. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.